Yo, Short Box Nation, this is Botter clocking in with a very quick announcement to make before we get on with the show. I'll be in Chicago attending C2E2, and if you'll be in Chicago attending the convention too, it means that you have a very unique opportunity to attend a live podcast show like never before. I'll be hosting a comic podcast crossover live show on Friday, April 26th. I'm going to be joined by very good friends of the show and frequent guest co-hosts like Chris Hacker from the Oblivion Bar podcast and Greg Ligtig from the First Issue Club. We're recording a live podcast show that's celebrating the best comics of the year so far. We're going to talk about the creators that are absolutely crushing it. And considering the people involved with the panel, you can expect a great time. You can expect the typical brand of comedy and entertainment. If you ever heard any of the other episodes where Chris and Greg have been guest co-hosts, you can expect that on steroids. So once again, if you're attending C2E2 this weekend and you're looking for something to do or you need a break from the convention floor and standing in lines, I highly encourage you to come sit in for this live podcast show taking place the Friday morning of the convention at 11:15 a.m. I'll have links to the room and the rest of the panel information in the show notes. So check that out if you'll be in Chicago. Come on out, sit in on the panel, and have a good time. Hopefully I get to meet you. With that being said, let's get this show started. I'd say this one's on definitely a B. I love the idea of this comic like attempting to tackle these various, you know, issues, themes like, you know, celebrity worship, capitalism, surveillance, legacy, and et cetera, you know, through the lens, you know, very, I guess complex would be a good word, like this complex family of multi-generational superheroes.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the Short Box Podcast, Season 6.
Short Box Podcast was recorded before a live internet audience.
Yo, Short Box Nation, welcome back. This is episode 321. New friends and first-time listeners, welcome to the show. You're now tuned into the Short Box Podcast, which, like it or love it, automatically inducts you into the Short Box Nation. So welcome to the club. My name is Botter Milligan, and today we'll be talking about Jupiter's Legacy, a comic book series from 2013 created by Mark Millar and Frank Quietly. It now has an upcoming streaming television series created by Stephen S. DeKnight, set to premiere on Netflix on May 7th, which would be this Friday if you're listening to this episode on release day, Wednesday. The series stars Josh Duhamel, Ben Daniels, Leslie Bibb, and more. We'll talk about the source material and the show in more detail, but first, allow me to introduce my crew of friends here with me in the Short Box studio today. Starting with a man who is part machine and part Picasso, it's Edmund Danzar, a.k.a. the Edbot 5000.
Yo.
And last but not least, she's the kindest podcaster you'll ever hear.
Aww.
Or at least the nicest podcaster on this show. Wow. It's Ashley Lanny Hoy.
What a bar you set.
I know, right? But it still reminds me, do you ever have your friend set you up with a girl and it's like, she has a great personality?
That's one of those. She's the nicest.
Very nice inside.
Out of four savages, she's the nicest one.
And as you can probably tell, Cesar is not here with us. He's out saving the world as part of a super soldier program with the National Guard. He'll be back next week.
Flag smasher.
Yeah. And while we're on introductions, let's go ahead and give a shout out to some very important people who help us keep the Short Box running. Starting with the comic shop and a proud sponsor of this show, Gotham City Limit. It's Jacksonville's premier place for toys, comics, collectibles, and more. If you live in the area, if you ever find yourself passing through Jack, stop by the shop on Southside Boulevard and tell them the Short Box sent you. Lastly, we want to spotlight the best patrons a podcast could ask for, and that's our Patreon subscribers. We could not maintain and grow this show without their help, so if you like what we're doing and you want to support our content, consider joining our Patreon community. You can click the link in the show notes for a list of perks and rewards you can enjoy when you join the Short Box Elite. And while you're here, make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast player of choice. You won't want to miss next week's episode, since we'll be recording our second artist spotlight of the year since our last one back in episode 314. We'll be paying some long overdue respect to a lesser known comic legend. Her name is Marie Severin. Go ahead and give her a quick Google search and meet us back here next week. Let's give it one more time for our sponsors and get this show going. Starting with a quick spoiler warning. If you haven't read the comic book Jupiter's Legacy, or if you're worried about a spoiler that might ruin the show for you, pause this episode until you're ready. The first volume of Jupiter's Legacy, which we'll be discussing this episode, is probably available at a local comic shop by you,
or if digital is your thing, it is also available on the Comixology app. For those of you unfamiliar with the source material that the TV series will pull from, Jupiter's Legacy, it explores the generational conflict between a group of aging superheroes known as the Union of Justice. It's comprised of six original members, including Sheldon Sampson, better known as the Utopian, his wife Grace, aka Lady Liberty, Utopian's brother Walter the Brainwave, his best friend who goes by Sky Fox, and two other heroes that go by the Flare and Blue Bolt, respectively. These heroes use their powers they gained in 1932 for the betterment of mankind, and now their children, specifically the Utopian and Lady Liberty's kids, Brandon and Chloe Sampson, are daunted by the prospect of living up to their parents' legacies. Ashley, Ed, was this your first time reading this? What did you guys know about it going in?
Now, I read it when I was in the shop. So that's when I read it when it was very slowly coming out and sporadically coming out.
Oh, my God, right?
Yeah.
It took... Because I remember hopping on it. Well, I mean, Jupiter's Legacy came out in 2013. I probably waited a couple years to get on it. Mm-hmm. And then I read the first five. And then I think people were still waiting on the second volume. So I came like at a right time.
It took like almost, what, 1 or 2 years to get this first five out. So I think that's why it's... Because I first read it when they when the comic companies do the... We need to fill some time. We combine the first two issues for a new issue. I was like, oh. So that's kind of where I started. So I started a little bit later when they did that kind of double issue, just in between, because it was so sporadically put out. That's when I kind of jumped on that. And I was like, wow, I want this to come on. You know, then I just waited for the trade.
Was it because Frank Quietly is just known? I mean, because the level of detail Frank Quietly puts in his artwork, what was it? Did that have anything to do with how long, or was it because Mark Millar was, you know, running the world?
For me at that time, it was more Millar or Miller. I don't know. A throws me off because I've heard it pronounced both ways. But for me, it was more Miller. And Quietly, I was still – this was kind of the book that got me on board with Quietly. Because before his – it's such a odd style with the small faces and the, you know, like plastic surgery. Everyone's like – their faces are pulled back. And they're tiny. So his style – because I first saw his stuff like on I think All-Star or Superman. And it was just so bizarre to me. But this is like the book that kind of, okay, now I get it. You know, okay, I get his stuff now. I like it.
What about you, Ashley? Were you reading it when it was coming out or?
No, I remember it coming out because there were people that were reading it and they kept like every few weeks they would come up and be like, can you check and see when the next one's coming out? And I remember looking that book up in Diamond like – so many times, and I was just like, it says they don't know. Yeah, and like, nobody knows.
It's canceled, bro.
Yeah. Whatever it comes out.
But yeah, I read it for the first time yesterday, and I liked it a lot.
So I messed up, and I got to give a shout out to Jonathan Sanders, a good friend.
Yeah,
Jonathan,
I didn't even know that. They were doing that.
Yeah, for giving me that information. So anyone listening that, you know, might be going on like Comixology or somewhere to read it, there is a re-release of the trade paperback or of the trades that under the Netflix, like Netflix re-released or something. You know, they got Netflix branding is the best way to kind of, you know, identify them. But it's volumes 1 through 4. Volume 1, you would think it's like the first volume of Jupiter's Legacy because it does say Jupiter's Legacy on the title. Mm-hmm. Well, that one, volumes 1 and 2 collect the prequel series.
Yeah, that Jupiter's, came out after.
Yeah, Jupiter's Circle. Volume 3 and 4 are, you know, Jupiter's Legacy volume 1 and 2. And I'm glad he said that because I read volume 1 and I had noticed the Netflix branding.
Yeah.
And I'm reading it the whole time and I'm like, I know it's been a while since I read this series.
This happened.
Why does this feel like something else?
That's confusing.
Then, yeah.
Because it wasn't written like that originally.
No.
And he never, you know, and I've been listening to some interviews with him. It's, and, you know, Netflix bought his Millerverse.
All of
imprint.
It. Yeah, not too long ago, like 2017 he sold it.
He started it like 2010. He started that imprint, and then 2017.
He cashed 40, out.
40, 50 million. But.
Damn, wait.
It's like
that was the deal?
40 or 50 million. They're not 100% sure.
Yeah.
It's probably somewhere.
And he's still like in charge of it, more or less. He's still executive producing. Him and Quietly are executive producing the show.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
Involved, so.
That is awesome. That is awesome. So yeah, if just a quick, like I said, reminder, if you're looking for the trades on Comixology and they happen even in physical, your local comic shop probably knows the difference. But volumes 1 and 2 are the prequel. Volumes 3 and 4 are Jupiter's Legacy. You'd probably want to read volume 3 if you want to read the first original 5 issue run. So I say all that to say I ended up reading Jupiter's Circle and Jupiter's Legacy for the assignment.
Yeah, that's
shout-outs.
So weird.
Yeah, shout-outs to John for giving us that background.
Yeah, because I saw the comment. I'm like, what are you talking about? And it's like, yeah, I was surprised because I have the image one, you know, back in the day still. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was just strange that they would – really confuse the market unless they're just trying to push those spinoffs, you know,
yeah.
to confuse
well, you
people.
Know how much of that's in the show. Like maybe there's a ton
yeah.
of like the
I
Jupiter's
think he
circle
said,
in the show.
He said there's more flashbacks of the
yeah.
prequel stuff in the show.
Yeah. yeah.
That sci-fi article had mentioned that this first, and I don't know if they're confirmed for a season 2 or 3 yet. I think maybe this, they've only got one season, but this one season is going to focus on, the freshman year of the Union. So like how they got their powers from the island, how they started the group. And I think kind of bounce around between like yeah. past and then present.
Because
like
the
new generation.
All like the new, because there's Chloe and you see them like in older versions of them. So, but yeah, it's, they look great. I mean, those costumes are just like the comic.
Yeah.
Actually, so, like based on the trailer, do you think this show will respect your time?
I think at this point I'm like so... I need stuff to watch. Like, I'm so excited. I was so bummed out that this show did not come out on Friday. I thought it came out this Friday. So I am. I'm, like, starved for, like, superhero content right now because there's no Falcon Winter Soldier. We have to wait for the
Loki
series.
Next month, June.
Yeah, it's
like
June
11th.
June. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we have to wait. So I'm super pumped for this. The trailer did kind of confuse me. Like, after, you know, reading the first 5 issues, I was like, what is all this stuff going on? So I want to read the rest of it before the show starts. And it does seem like I think I saw the word derivative a few times in like these articles.
Yep.
But at the same time, you're paying your Netflix subscription. Yeah. So you're getting this for cheap. Like just enjoy it.
Or not. Or if you
or
really
not,
don't care
to
watch it.
And that's the thing too. It's like it's stuff that this water has been tread before.
Yeah.
But I still like seeing a different perspective and I still And even the comic, it's like it's, you know, we've kind of tackled these issues before, but it's so well done.
When we say derivative or treaded or this title has treaded like these waters, what are we saying exactly?
Just like the tropes of old fashioned, you know, superhero principles in modern times or updating, you know, like when you see
like deconstruction superheroes.
Like Watchmen, like Squadron Supreme, like the stuff that even like, you know, The Boys and stuff like that. We've seen these kind of superheroes set in modern times trying to adapt to modern, you know, principles. But man, it was so well done because that's probably one of my favorite things he's written, you know, Mark Millar, because like a lot of his other stuff, it's good, but it's very, you know, action movie-ish, you know, like his Marvel run and like things like that. And I get it. And some of his choices, because Mark Millar is like I've always think he has great ideas, but I think a lot of his stories just kind of go in weird directions that don't make sense to the characters. But when he started his Millerverse stuff, that's when I thought he really, you know, came into his own when he had, you know, I guess total control. And who knows, you know, working for DC and Marvel, how much input, you know, editors have to change things here and there. So
on that first Netflix version of Jupiter's Legacy of the trade, they, you know, of course, in the back, they give like a really kind of cool brief biography for every person involved in the project. So they had, you know, a little blurb for Mark Millar. And that was refreshing to read because they mention how much of impact and influence he's had on superhero and comic book movies and media in the last year. I mean, you know, his writing at Marvel, you know, between Ultimates, which influenced the first Avengers movie,
Civil War,
yeah. which influenced, you know, the movie after the same name. But then I started looking at, you know, just his creator owned properties that have had, you know, movie adaptations. I mean, he's responsible. His comic books have given us the movie adaptations of Kingsman, Kick-Ass, that Angelina Jolie movie Wanted,
yeah.
was in that movie as well. And then there's a fourth one. And now Jupiter's Legacy would be the fourth. That's what I'm trying to get at. But he tends to write in a very blockbuster kind of like a movie-esque way. And it makes, and I think that's only further evident because he ends up creating like his own comic, you know, imprint, Millar's World. And I think he was kind of ahead of the game in the sense of
100%.
Like,
he's writing screenplays.
Exactly.
Because they're all short and sweet, you know, like, because there's a lot of titles in there, but a lot of them are just one arc.
For sure.
You know, Jupiter's Legacy is probably the longest running thing.
It is. It's Jupiter's Legacy is his longest running series, beating out his other long kind of running ones like Super Crooks and Nemesis. And this was the first collaboration between him and Quietly since their work in 2001 on The Authority. But to your point, you know, I always tend to give, you know, Todd McFarlane a lot of credit for being like kind of this mogul, you know, entrepreneur's mentality and comic books. But Millar has, you know, has been doing this for a hot minute. He kind of saw like, oh, wait a minute. These, you know, production companies are, you know, scooping up these comic books for these adaptations. And
yeah, he built his brand, I think, looking to get like that Netflix deal. It's almost like because.
He had a plan. I think he had a plan. Yep. And these books, like the ones that I've read, like Huck
is great.
Chrononauts, is it Magic Order?
Yep, Magic Order.
Those all felt like they should be movies or shows. Yeah, and like his, like Chrononauts, I don't remember the name of the two main characters, but I remember instantly absolutely loving them. They're so funny and like so likable, and I think that that's where he really like excels.
And his stuff is accessible because a lot of those United Kingdom guys, they're really dense, like a Grant Morrison, Warren Ellis. You know, Warren Ellis is pretty accessible, but you know, like a, you know, Alan Moore, those guys are bizarre and that's part of their charm. But you know, he knows, like, because I was listening to an interview, he says, you know, my favorite movies are like Jaws, Star Wars, all these blockbuster action movies, mainstream influences. And he said a friend of him is like, you should put some like foreign film that'll make you sound smarter. It's like, this is what I like. And I found out he was actually a aspiring comic book artist. So like, but he, I think he said, he was like, you know, I was the best drawer in my class, but you know, on a worldwide stage, he was doing like a portfolio review with Dick Giordano, like in the '80s.
Oh, really?
And he was like walking up, he just had like a folder. Like not even a portfolio, like a folder, like with drawings on like copy paper, like in cheap pen. And then he saw this guy's portfolio ahead of him. It was like just amazing. And he's like, ooh. So,
if only Jeff Lemire would have been in that line behind him.
Maybe, but unlike Lemire, which is one of my favorite writers, I know we slam him a lot, but he's probably one of my favorite
modern
writers.
Oh, he's an
amazing
writer, yeah.
But he definitely, I don't think Miller has done this, but he forces his art on you when he's writing. He's like, I'm doing this cover, I'm doing this story. With Millar, he even says, like, in his writing process, he will draw the characters out first and draw everything. So it's just kind of interesting to find out he says, aren't all comic writers failed artists? Like, who as a kid wants to say, I'm going to write the coolest comic ever? No, it's like, no, you're going to draw. I want to draw the coolest Batman ever. I want to draw the coolest Ninja Turtle. I want to draw the coolest. You don't, as a 5-year-old, you don't pick up a pencil. It's like, I'm going to write the coolest comic ever. You know, he's such a fun, you know, interview. So he doesn't put this weird, like, you know, aura around him. He seems like a very accessible guy. And in recruiting artists, he's like, it's like, because in the Miller world, he's like, basically, it's a 50-50 cut with the rights. So whoever draws with them, it's a 50-50 cut. And that goes all the way to the movies if it gets picked up for a movie. So he basically goes and says, hey, do you want to be a thousandaire or do you want to be a millionaire? I'll make you a millionaire. It's like, that is bold.
Which, I mean, when you look at his, you know, all the titles he's created in Millar's world, and the all-star kind of like, all-star cast of artists that he has. Like, he never has a weak artist on his projects.
No.
Whether it's Sean Murphy for Chrononauts, Frank Quietly on Jupiter's Legacy.
John Romita Jr.
For Kick-Ass. Who do you have for Magic Order? It was...
I know, I'm not going to say it correctly.
Olivier
Coipel. We'll just have to see you do a little soundbite for that.
And then even recently, I think he did a series called Prodigy with the guy who does American Vampire that escapes me at the moment.
Yeah,
man. It'll come to me here in a sec. But I say all that to say he never has a weak artist on his projects.
Yeah.
And I guess hearing you say that, Ed, about that mentality that he has, it makes sense. Like, if I'm an artist and I know that I'm going to get not only a 50% cut on this comic, but also the movie rights. I'm going to go to fucking Millar's world.
Yeah, he said that's the most important thing for comics is because it's a visual medium. So it's like, you know, it's like any writer who says – you know, they're you know, their stories are going to be not going to be better with a lesser known artist is crazy, because he'll get great artists, but he'll get name artists, you know, too. He's not a guy that's bringing up like a lot of, you know, newcomers. You know, he's getting big guns to help him out.
Yo, this is Botter. Sorry for interrupting this episode, but I'll keep it brief. I wanted to let you know about a massive sale we have going on over at the Short Box Store on all of our merchandise and apparel. That's theshortboxstore.bigcartel.com. You can now save 20% off your entire order using the discount code YO, Y-O-O. So if you've been waiting for the right time to finally buy that gauntlet snapback, or if you ever wanted to buy any of the shirts you see me wear on the podcast, well, now's your chance to get them for a steal. We still have a few sizes left of everything, but they won't last long, and once they're gone, they are gone. And did I mention that all of our apparel is screen printed on high quality material? None of that heat transfer or direct to garment stuff. Our shirts are some of the most comfortable ones you'll ever wear, and the hats look even better in person. So wear your support for the Short Box Nation proudly, knowing that you're going to look damn good doing it. Get to theshortboxstore.bigcartel.com as soon as you can, and don't forget to use that discount code YO, Y-O-O, to save 20% off your entire order. All of this information can be found in this episode's show notes if you want to get there faster. Thanks for not pressing fast forward. Now back to the show.
And it's Rafael Albuquerque.
Albuquerque.
That is the name of the artist that he teamed up with for Prodigy.
And Huck, too, right?
Yep, and yep. Huck as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, while we're on the topic of Mark Millar, let's talk about his co-partner in creating this series, the artist Frank Quietly. How familiar were you with Frank Quietly's work?
Not very familiar at all. I got into it pretty quickly. Like, the first couple of pages, it was sort of like you have to get used to
it. So weird looking.
But I got used to it pretty quickly. And by the end of it, the only thing I didn't get on board with was, why doesn't Chloe have eyebrows?
Yeah, she looks like an alien.
She looks very strange, and yeah. I was waiting for there to be like an explanation, but there wasn't. But other than that, like I thought that
one of those blasts burns her eyeballs off every time she uses.
The level of detail was amazing in that book.
You know, and I think you probably, or you and between you and Ed, you guys kind of put it into words. I really enjoy Frank Quietly's artwork because of the level of detail and like how sometimes hyper realistic it looks.
Yeah,
but I think that is also. The slight thing I got against it is that characters, they all look really sometimes like old. Like he tends to really go into
the kids
like,
look weird.
Yeah, too, like sometimes they look they look like they're 60.
The,
you know,
kids on the bus are like, oh, these are weird looking little dwarf people.
It's like dang, this is a lot of detail. It's like every wrinkle on their face, every wrinkle in the clothes.
And sometimes it's like just the way they're the proportions of their face. It always because there's like the eyes seem like way too. Far apart on some characters, you know, it's a bizarre style, but I've grown to appreciate it. I think for me, it's like everything else is great, but just the faces were so bizarre to me, you know, because I haven't really seen anyone draw like that.
You know what he really excels at is robots. Mm-hmm. He can draw some hardware.
And,
you know, I think he's at like that Jeff Darrow level of how much can you possibly fit in this one panel? But and something I noticed maybe for the first time rereading this is that he doesn't have a lot of automatopoeias that, you know, like sound effects and different noises in his panels. Like his panels tend to just kind of stand on their own. Yep. And I'm thinking about, I think it was issue 5. Where Chloe and Hutch's son, he gets lured in by that Agent Wolf character because they're trying to capture him because he's a superhero or he's got superpowers. But there's a scene where he kind of like crashes into, he crashes into like the floor or something like that. But it's like a 3-page sequence and there is no sound, no dialogue boxes, no nothing. It shows like Jordan being knocked out the sky, he crashes into like the ground, and then the next two panels are all these soldiers like, you know, running up on him and kind of like having him at gunpoint. And I was like, wow, there's no dialogue, there's no like wham or crash.
Yeah, it gives it a more like cinematic feel when you don't have those like big word balloons and big, you know, like I said, onomatopoeia.
Are you guys familiar with like Frank Quietly's other bodies of work? I think my first introduction to him was like in when he was at Marvel drawing new Grant Morrison's X-Men series. And then a few years ago, I got into his We Three.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Which I think is maybe like the one series that a lot of people recommend when it comes to Rent Quietly, because I don't know if it was a creator own. Was it creator own? Probably.
It was Vertigo.
Yeah, Vertigo. Yeah, okay, Vertigo. But I bring that up because I was going to say Frank Quietly's human, you know, characters sometimes look a little odd, but his robotics always look good.
His animals look great.
And his animals look fantastic. Like, that is a series I would definitely recommend.
Did you read that, We Three?
Yeah, I read
We Three. Oh, my God. Yeah. The gorilla robot thing? It's like, oh, my God. Yeah, I just see him just, like, laughing, just drawing this. This is great. I'm getting paid for this.
And I get hyped when I see Frank Quietly. And, like, also, of course, I can't mention Frank Quietly and not mention All-Star Superman, which, you know, probably one of my favorite comics of all time. And I get hype anytime I see Frank Quietly on a project. Because, he's one of those names when you see on a project, you're like, oh, this is going to be a big deal. You know, this company is going to put some money in advertising. They're going to allow him to do what he wants to do. But I also know it might mean that this book is going to be on hiatus. Like, I'm always expecting.
It's going to be a delay.
I'm like, here we go, baby. Come
All
on.
Right. Wait for the trade.
Yeah. Ashley, I want to know about your favorite character from the comic. But before you share that, let's go ahead and pause right here for a super quick commercial break.
Hey, Shortbox Nation. Sorry for the interruption, but we want to talk about one of our favorite comic shops that happens to be a proud sponsor of this here podcast.
You're talking about Gotham City Limits.
Whoa, Batman, what are you doing here?
It's just me, Potter at sea. I've got laryngitis. But you know what doesn't have laryngitis? Jacksonville's premier location for comic books, collectibles, toys, and more.
Oh, and don't forget, pool customers get 10% off their comics.
Shut up, I'm talking now, punk. Gotham City Limits offers free bags and boards.
And 20% off trades and hardcovers.
I don't need a Robin for this ad spot.
But Batman, you're forgetting about the most important part about Gotham City Limit. It's a comic shop welcome to everyone, for the diehard collectors and the new fans.
I told you I'm not Batman, but have Alfred get the car ready. I'm rich, so it's on me. We're going to Gotham City Limits to spend some money on comics.
Who is your favorite character in the comic, and do you have a favorite issue or maybe like standout moment or panel?
I mean, my favorite character, like, I think the most likable character in the whole book is Jason for sure.
That's the kid, yeah.
Yeah, the kid. Because he's just such this little, like, optimistic, like, happy, just I have to do everything right kid. He's like, I want to make the world better. So he's my favorite character. Well, he's the most likable character. My favorite character is Hutch, because I think it's kind of cool that, like, his...
He likes the bad boys.
Well, but he doesn't have superpowers, so he has, like, superpowered wife, superpowered kid, and he's just got, like, this stick thing that does kind of cool things, but just, you know, it probably sucks to be the only one without superpowers, so I just think that makes
him... And
his
dad had superpowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think his dad was part of the original team. Mm-hmm. He went by the Sky Fox. Because in Jupiter Circle, they go into, like, you know, that OG team and how they ended up breaking up and things like that. But his dad was Sky Fox, so superhero turned supervillain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he creates that rod for him.
Yeah, and he has no power. So I think he's, the most interesting character to me. So I'd say that he was.
And he didn't have to stick around. He could have.
He definitely did.
He could have teleported out of there. It's like, you're pregnant. Bloop. See ya.
Yeah. So he coming from a supervillain father and having supervillain tendencies with the guy with the sharks
but
and stuff.
Trying to turn a new leaf and even going to Sheldon to talk to him about, you know, raising the kid and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That was,
and he's
that was
just
a great
like,
scene.
Nope.
He's very old school. You know, like I think he gets mad at his brother's son, which would be his nephew then, right? Jules.
Oh, that's right. So he does want the superheroes to date. That's right. He wants the superheroes to date other superheroes because he got upset because his nephew dated the lady that he saved in the house crash. So who does he want them to date? Because there's not that many superheroes.
So you got Sheldon, an old school guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that having a child, you know, his daughter having a child with, you know, his former best friend turned supervillain's son
out of wedlock
mm-hmm. would play not that it's
this
you know
a dude from the 20s
exactly
this is some exactly Puritan
I would
bullshit.
I would imagine that probably had something to do with it and I'm glad you brought that up, that scene, because you know Hutch going to Sheldon and saying, look, I'm here to, you know, I will raise, you know, your daughter's child. I want to be here. Mm-hmm. It then took it from being just like a superhero story to now like about family. And I like those moments where like they kind of have like those very familiar like family moments, you know. It touches like multi-generational. Like this is a superhero family that spans multiple generations with not only just like friends, close families and things like that. But I think think that's when it tends to shine, like in those very small moments. And it shows like Millar is great at writing very, like he is amazing at writing big action moments. But he's also really good at those like kind of slice of life moments too.
Yeah. And you gotta, and it's strange just because of the generational thing, because these heroes are from the 30s, they skipped a generation of having children. Because if their kids are, what, 20 maybe?
Oh,
in their
yeah.
20s? They had their kids, if they were, you know, probably in their 60s, 70s or so, just starting to have kids. So they skipped a generation of people. Because from the generation of, you know, Sheldon and Walter to their kids, there's like, you know, a big gap.
For sure. And actually, I'm right there with you. When you get to issue, what is it, 4 and 5, where it focuses on Chloe and Hutch on the run, raising yeah. their, you know, now superhero, you know, superpowered son, Jason. That's when I really got invested. And that's when I found, I was like, okay, these three right here, this small family yeah. is my
yeah.
favorite group.
And Chloe's my favorite, eyebrows aside. That's because she shows the most change from yeah. the beginning panel where she's like kind of a
100%.
Like a drug yeah. taking kind of a floozy
celebrity, you know,
to
yeah. like
to badass supermom at
she
the
went,
end.
Yeah, she yeah. went from Paris Hilton to yep. Jessica Alba yeah. now, you know, mother, you know, Jessica Alba.
Yeah,
daughter.
So it's like hers. And one of my, and it's such a, it's almost like a throwaway scene, but I thought it was so funny when they were running away, teleporting to different places, and the car, she likes, the car hits her, she blocks
oh
him, and then the guy's like all twisted, and she's like, is he okay?
He'll be fine, run.
Like, he'll be fine. It's like yeah. a pretzel.
And I would be really surprised if we saw Jason or Chloe and Hutch having to raise a kid in this first season.
Yeah, I think the cliffhanger will she'll find out she's pregnant
for sure,
or OD and crash through the table. And
yes,
cut off.
Yes. But speaking of, and that kid Jason, man, is so man, he's so fun. Like he's got so much heart, and like he like the ideals of his grandparents, you know, are definitely strong in him. Like he believes in good and wanting to be a superhero, and things like that. And one of my favorite moments is in issue 4 where you get to see Jason showcase, and I mean, what, he's maybe 5, 6, 7 years old maybe, yeah. But in issue 4 you get to see him showcase his powers for the first time in that fire rescue scene.
Oh yeah.
And once again, another kind of like another sequence of pages, maybe what, 3 or 4 pages max, barely any sound. Jason shows up, there's a fire that is you know, even these firefighters can't deal with. And he summons like their powers are all over the place for the record, yeah. too. They're like super strong.
They got psychic, some psychic powers.
They got like an amalgam of a yeah. bunch of powers. But seeing like this little kid summon that thunderstorm to take out the fire. And there's like that one panel where they close in on his face and like he's got his fist up kind of yeah. like commanding the skies. Yeah. It's like, wow, a god lives in the body of this little kid.
And then he's building that thing on the moon, that like tracker.
Yeah, and
he's
so
like super smart.
Yeah, and super smart.
Professor
like,
X everything. Smart.
Yeah.
And I'll say, you know, Jupiter's Circle, which is that prequel, they definitely spend more time talking about what led to that original superhero team, the Union, splitting apart and why certain events have impacted their kids in such a way. I've read or I've seen Jupiter's Legacy be described as a mix of like Star Wars, King Kong, mm-hmm. mainly just because the island is so mysterious
yeah.
and stuff. And then like Roman mythology, which makes sense because, you know, when you start looking at Roman mythology, there's a lot of like familial affairs going on and things mm-hmm. like that. So I can see that. But if I had to describe Jupiter's Circle, the prequel, it's a little bit of like Watchmen meets like Mad Men. Not really sure. And like old like 50s pulp comic, you know, superhero pulp comic books. Ed, did you have a favorite issue or character or standout moment?
The favorite, like I said, my favorite character is Chloe, easily, because like I said, she shows the most growth. I do like Walter's smugness. He just looks like a smug asshole.
The first three issues, maybe they didn't get my full attention, because there just wasn't any likable characters. I was like,
yeah.
Okay, so you got Chloe, the Paris Hilton of the superhero yeah. community.
Utopian's Brandon, kind of an asshole, too, because he's so old-fashioned and like yeah. condescending
yeah.
to people.
Yeah, Sheldon yeah. was, you know, the little snaky brother.
Yeah.
He's jealous. You didn't really spend much time with the mother, Grace Lady Liberty. No. She was, you know, just...
When she's showing her best mom moment, because we all have, like, I think... Normally, it's dad's the hard ass, and then mom kind of comes in and yeah. like softens the blows, blue. You know, literally and metaphorically sometimes. But but you know, when she has to come back home after the overdose, she's so empathetic. It's like, look, there's a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah.
This is what, this is how you deal with it. We weren't there for you. We were too busy
doing
this.
Damn, that's a good point. Yeah.
And like, boom. And then all of a sudden, you know, she gets, then everyone gets.
We kill her in the same issue that we
yeah, get. Yeah. It's like we only get to see that fraction of her, like a little bit at the beginning mm-hmm. where, you know, they're hiring the ship. But we get to see that nice moment before typical, you know, Mike Mueller's like, all right.
In true Martin Mueller fashion.
Yeah, fuck you.
Let's go, like you know.
20 swords. It's like, they have to be that ruthless.
That was pretty like, gruesome
it's like, panel. It's like, you think, and I love that power. And it's like so strange that we've never seen, at least I can't remember seeing like Emma Frost do something like this or Professor X, where they just trap someone in a
mental,
like a psychic painting, as he calls it.
Yeah.
It's like, you really thought you could, you know, fight this, you know, beat 30 superheroes?
Well,
and
physical,
it shows her
yeah.
with like
what happens to the physical body. Yeah.
And then aneurysm.
And so to me, that felt a little contrived at that point, because so you're telling me Sheldon was able to convince his nephew, Brandon, to kill his father, as well as every other superhero in the community, to kill the Utopian because he was too hard. I was like, this is kind of
I felt it was a little weak. You see a little.
Because he's a hard ass in old school.
Well, you see, and you're right, they should have built that up more, but you do hear, like, when they're fighting kind of the dark side character,
Black Star.
Black Star. And he's like, I'm not fighting that guy. I was like, I'll just wait till the end.
This it's younger like generation.
A cigarette. Yeah, it was a bunch of slackers.
This younger generation of superheroes are terrible.
Yeah,
like,
well, that's
not likable at
all. And the thing that they imply in this is basically why this whole conflict happens is because villains are kind of a, you know, we're kind of in a peaceful age. Like all villains are an afterthought. It's just this one random guy breaks out of the, you know, super villain prison. But all the problems that, you know, Walter is bringing up is like, look, the economy's shit. We need to go in. It's like, we've taken care of these super villains. We've taken care of these like cosmic enemies and crime, but we need to figure out how to, you know, I don't want to see people at, you know, the food line, you know, we need to get our economy back up.
We could be doing more for superpowers.
We could be doing more. We can't just, and then I think he's been behind the scenes this whole time. Like imagine 20 years of him just talking shit behind their back. And the way that Utopian handles it, like when he goes in, when Walter's like
showing
talking,
him like that,
and
then
he basically,
briefing.
You know, belittles him in front of like these high ranking politicians. It's like, you can imagine 20 years of that kind of behavior. Hmm. Like, you know, where he differs from Superman, there's not that empathy. There's that my way or the highway. This is the only way we do it. You know, this is the only way we can fix things. This is what we should do. Listen to your politicians. Listen, follow the rules, blah, blah, blah. And every scene he's interacting with people, he's talking down to them.
That's
even
good point.
If
yeah.
he's right. Even if he's right, he's handling it in probably the worst way. And you figure, we don't see all the years of him doing that. And then Walter coming in, stirring the pot, you know, and especially with the kids and stuff, it's like, you know, because Jules is like, man, that guy, he's like, he was bitching about him. Like when his son drunkenly tried to help that ship out, you can imagine like years and years of that unbending, you know, sticking to these rules from, like, you know, 1929, 1930. There is probably a lot of built up hostility.
A lot of things that would benefit from having like a couple more pages,
yeah, and that's
or told
style.
Yeah,
he's like just very like, okay,
compressed.
Let's
compressed is the word I'm thinking about. It's a very compressed story where the characters, I don't think, act out of character, but they're not fleshed out enough. So when they do these actions, it makes sense, but at the same time, it's like, wow, this is a very radical train of logic.
And I
you know?
Think that's just his writing style. He's not a guy that writes long series and, you know, things like that. And even in interviews, like, I remember reading Huck, and I really loved that story. And I was like, four issues? Five issues? And that was it. It's like, this is all we get, you know?
I think Jupiter's Legacy is maybe an exception to that rule, because he's done, you know, there's two volumes to Jupiter's Legacy, and then, of course, you do got the prequel. So I think he does, this might have, I think maybe this series resonates with him a little more.
Even his more fleshed out stuff is still condensed, you know? When he was coming up with the characters and stuff, you know, sometimes he says when he writes, he'll, you know, he'll draw the characters and he'll come up with all these stories and backstories and things about them. So by the time he was, and he's a writer, he says he works backwards. He's like, here's the ending. Okay, now how do we get here?
I wanted to go back to that trailer real quick, because I think there might be two trailers. I only watched one, which was like, you know, the 2.5 minute one, and it showed, you know, it was kind of cool to see some of the things from the comic books, real life adaptation, like the island, You know, we don't spend a lot of time about the island in the comic books. I think total time was 2 pages worth of, you know, stuff about the island.
You see the alien, but you don't see what they had to do to get their powers. But the trailer, it looks like you see more of that because they... That all that obelisk thing that kind of glows when they put their hands on it.
Yeah, the island looks that little island sequence or scene that they showed in the trailer looked really good. Mm-hmm. We even get to see the that big bad in issue Darkstar. He's gonna show up in it, and Ed, you already brought it up, but I think the costumes look fantastic.
Yeah,
And it looks like they are going to kind of lean more into like the drama of things, you know, like the family aspects, you know, their relationships with one another. I think we'll see a lot of Brandon and Chloe's prior life or, you know, earlier life, like that celebrity kind of life. You know, if you enjoy like those CW superhero shows that are very overly dramatic at times.
Yeah.
I think this might be up your alley, if I'm not mistaken. And Ed, I wanted to ask you, how would you sell this comic to someone? And like, are there other comics or genres or properties that this reminds you of that you could kind of point to?
Millar's work is very, like I said, very accessible. And the influences are there. So it's not wholly original, but it's so well done and so well crafted. Like I said, you see shades of the Watchmen. You see, you know, you see a lot of those titles, Squadron Supreme. You see like, even like someone described it as like, if the Incredibles had shitty kids.
Damn, I wish you had read that earlier. Yeah, that's pretty on point.
And, but like I said, it's if you want a good, like kind of modern, you know, superhero story, but it's more focused on, it's kind of like, I think the reason, you know, a series like, you know, The Walking Dead became so successful was that it wasn't just a zombie book. Mm-hmm. It was a relationship book. It was the zombies were in the background. They were the threat, but it was the people that you invested in. And I think this, even this first arc, you invest in these characters, especially like towards the end where you said everything picks up, the family's there, they're on the run. Then it's like the kid basically gets the parents on board.
Yeah, he's the heart of the whole series.
Yeah, the kid's like I said, it's not wholly original, but I think a lot of his stuff is that accessibility gets you in. And then, you know, in this case, like the writing and the art, that really will keep you on board.
Yeah, and it's got that, for me, it's got like, Mark Millar has a signature, like, way of writing, you know, it tends to be very like bombastic, over the top, sometimes a little like, you know, self-aware and edgy, you know, for the sake of being edgy. But I don't think he don't write terrible stuff, you know.
No, this like, is a lot toned down from like a lot of his
true,
like, especially like, from like, Kick-Ass like
Nemesis and stuff like that. Like, yeah, very good point. Very good point. Ashley, do you think could you give this to like this comic, Jupiter's Legacy, Volume 1? Could you give it to a new fan in hopes that they'd maybe look into comics either as a serious hobby or just getting into them?
So I'm not saying that it's like not a great trade. There's other like Mark Millar stuff I'd probably give them first.
Like what? What are you thinking?
I'm just thinking like Chrononauts because that book was just absolutely so entertaining. Mm-hmm. And I think somebody that hasn't read a lot of comics, it'll read like a movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
stuff
I would,
like Empress too. It's like, like Star Wars. You know?
Yeah, there's
like,
just,
this is pretty easy to understand.
He just has so much great stuff out there that this wouldn't be my first choice, but definitely like it's worth reading, even for like the artwork.
Yeah,
yeah. You know what? And thinking about Empress, like Mark Millar tends to write. You know, he really likes to focus on like redemptions, you know, like because Chloe, like you said, starts off as, you know, a character you could care less about. But by the end, when she has her, you know, kid and she's got to kind of, you know, play mom and channel like her parents, you know, the way that they raised her and things like that, you start like, you know, she starts redeeming herself and you're like, oh, I really kind of like Chloe. Same thing for like Empress as well. You know, it's a story about a mom escaping a bad relationship and, you know, having to stand up to those consequences and things like that. Mark, if you enjoy a good like redemption story, I think this would be good. But to your point, Mark Millar's other catalogs, I think, are definitely stronger. I think if it's safe to say if you enjoy, like Ed had mentioned, like things like Watchmen, Squadron Supreme, or if you enjoyed Boys, this might kind of be up your alley for sure. Mm-hmm. Like that deconstructed, you know,
it's
kind
not
of
as
violent,
mean spirited as the Boys.
Definitely, yeah. This one's,
but it's yeah, it's.
This one's definitely got a heart. Mm-hmm. Ed, what would you, in closing, what do you want to grade? What do you grade this comic overall?
Oh, man. I would probably, just rereading it and I still enjoy it, I would probably, it'd probably be B plus, A minus, I would say.
Okay, yeah. That's solid. What about you, Ashley?
Yeah, I give it a solid B. I mean, I can't just be like throwing A's out there all the time.
It means something.
But, you know, still above average.
For sure. I'd say B as well.
Well, it's tough because we always pick stuff that
we like.
Yeah, that's true.
So like, I mean, if the listeners want to listen to us for an hour and a half, you know, talk about something we hate, then we could definitely end up selling that. I'd say this one's on definitely a B. I love the idea of this comic like attempting to tackle these various, you know, issues, you know, whether it be socio or economic themes, like, you know, celebrity worship, capitalism, surveillance, legacy, and et cetera, you know, through the lens of these like different heroes in this, like, you know, very, I guess complex would be a good word, like this complex family of multi-generational superheroes. Like, I have nothing but great things to say about the art because it's by Frank Quietly. And even like the coloring and the letters by Peter Daughtry, I believe his name is.
Yeah.
Fantastic combination. Visually, looks great. But I think the catalyst of the series, you know, in the first three issues, you know, Brandon killing his father, it just felt empty. And it should have, I think, what it should have been a bigger, maybe emotional moment. And maybe it wasn't meant to be, you know, a big moment. Maybe that was just supposed to set the story up. And then, you know, Chloe, Hutch, and Jason were the heart of it, which they tend to be. But it just felt a little contrived. And I don't know if it's because he only had five issues to tell it and he just needed to get it going or not. But that might be the only ding I got it, but against it. But the rest of the series is a lot more captivating, you know, when it tends to focus on Chloe, Hutch, and Jason on the run and them having to fight, you know, their evil uncle and stuff. It's good stuff. So I'll give it a B. Like I said, episode one will be out this Friday on Netflix. This episode comes out on Wednesday. So a few days after that, hopefully, you know, it gets you set up and warmed up for that premiere. Before we go on break, I want to try something a little different. We normally save this segment for the second half, but we've spent so much time talking about a relatively older comic. I'd like to go ahead and end this first half of the show spotlighting some newer comics that our listeners might be interested in. Shortbox Nation, welcome to our No Comic Shop for Old Men segment.
No Comic Shop for Old Men.
We're going to talk about some new comics that you can find in a local comic shop near you, or digitally, if that's your thing. Ashley, I'd like you to go ahead and kick us off. What's the new comic you're spotlighting this week?
I have a Marvel comic this week.
What?
I know.
Loki. Whoa, wait, whoa, 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 whoa.
Loki Unchained.
I've been reading some of the like the X-Men stuff and just some, you know, kind of some stuff here and there.
Bodder's so happy right now.
And it's all been, you know, all right. Not really knocking my socks off, but I'm enjoying it. But I read Marvel's number one
this week. Yeah.
And I really like, so it's Kurt, Busiek. Is it Busiek or Busick?
Busick, probably. Don't go by my recommendation. I always get a second opinion, probably Busick.
And the artist is, I know I'm going to say this wrong, Yildiré Cinar. But I really like the idea of, instead of following characters, following storylines, it's just taking place in New York City. So, like, the Punisher drops in and he's got stuff going on, and like Thor's doing stuff that's going on. You don't know if any of it's connected. Like, Spider-Man's got stuff with Vulture, and it's just the setting that's like the main part of this issue, not specific characters or storylines or anything like that. And I just thought that was really cool.
What point of view is it from?
Oh, well, I guess there is a main character. There's the guy, and he's just like a hipster dude.
The name escapes me, but he is like selling superhero tours because it takes place, like she said, in Manhattan or New York. So he's giving like superhero tours with like old superhero technology. So like there's these tourists who hire him for a tour, and he's taking them on a ride with the old Fantastic cars, whatever they were called, and they happen to like run into like some action going on, and then things escalate.
It's like that ride at Universal Studios, the Spider-Man ride, the Daily Bugle.
I think you put it well, because that was my thing when I saw the previews. I love Kurt Busiek. I think he writes some of my favorite comics, whether it be Marvel's or Astro City. And when I saw that, my only thing is that they are milking him and Alex Ross's Marvels to the point it's like searching for any of these comics on Google is a pain in the ass. Because what they end up doing is there's Marvels, then there's Marvel. Now there's the Marvels, I believe is the name of this one.
Just put a date in. Just put 2021 if you're looking.
But that's it. They're not that far. Anyways, that's my little minor gripes. I picked up the first issue too, and I could not. I was like, I was reading all the solicitations, and I just couldn't wrap my mind like, all right, what is this one about? But you put it really well. It's essentially the story of. It's a story that is interconnected across the Marvel universe. So I think Kurt Busiek had said in that letters page, like, yeah, next issue, this might be going on around the same time this is going on, and we might dive into it or we won't.
So it just, he's got, like, as a writer, that's a lot to take on. Like, what do you focus on? Like, all these, you have all these different, like, pots going, but I liked it.
It says, like, ADD. Just like, the Punisher's here. Spider-Man.
Well, and it was unexpected. It was like, oh, Punisher, cool. Like, Punisher's here, guys.
Yeah, you never, hi, Frank.
Yeah, you never know who shows up. Yeah. What about you, Ed? What you got today?
This one, the second issue, just came out, and it came out the same week as Ultra Mega, and it was a very hard choice to see which one I like better that week, but it's James Stokoe's Orphan and the Five Beasts.
You have been on a roll.
This is a good time to get into comics because there's a lot of good stuff coming out.
I am so glad you said that because I was just telling someone that I don't know what it is, but in the last, I think, 6 months, I'll give it that, maybe even last year, comics have been spectacular, especially like number ones from not just Image, but like Boom, IDW, Dark Horse, Vault. Yeah. Like, it is a spectacular time to be into comic books, especially like...
Yeah, even like the big two are putting out some really good quality stuff too. So it's like, it's been like an embarrassment of riches and brokenness to get all this stuff. So, but it's, if you like James Stokoe, if you like, you know, Orcstein, he's done like, I think, Alien Dead Orbit, but it's basically like a kung fu, essentially like a kung fu movie plot, basically, Orphan Mo, who's the lead protagonist.
I can hear the Wu-Tang soundtrack every time I open it.
I want, if he has that podcast, I want him to review this comic, to do a soundtrack for that. Method
Yeah, the Method podcast, yeah.
And, or the RZA. Someone do this. Someone likes this stuff. But it's basically, if you like his artwork, this is a beautiful book. He does not take any panels off. His line work is insane. Like him and Trad Moore, very unique, newer artists that I really like. And I'll throw in Daniel Warren Johnson. Daniel? Yeah, and his Beta Ray Bill, that's probably going to be my next week because that's been really fun. And that's a couple issues just came out of that. Issue 2 just came out of that too. But it's basically kind of your kung fu storyline. An old dying master, his you know, his pupil has to go fight his five former disciples who've kind of turned evil. And so basically it's kind of like a video game, kung fu movies, fighting these big bosses. Like he fights a guy, Thunder Thighs, in the second issue.
Which is such a wild villain.
It's a wild, yeah. Like, he's just weird. It's just it's so bizarre. It's you know, the storyline is not so original, but the visuals are 1,000% original. Like I said, if you want to see something visually different and just all action and crazy lines, and I think if you were into like you know, manga stuff and you kind of want to go towards that, you see something, this is a good gateway for that too, because you can see the influence there. But and it's a beautiful, beautiful comic, and it's put out by Dark Horse.
Well said. My comic on my spotlight today is one published by Aftershock. You know, speaking about like, you know, smaller, and I say that respectively, of course, smaller publishers putting out good stuff. This one's good. Shadow Doctor. It's written by Peter Calloway. Drawn by, I want to say it's Georges or Jorges, I apologize, Genty. It's based on a true story about the writer's grandfather, so Nathaniel Calloway. He was a black man who graduated from medical school in the early 1930s. He was unable to get any work at like any Chicago hospitals. He was unable to secure a loan from a bank to even start his own practice because he was black. So he turns to the mafia, run by none other than Al Capone at this time, for help. So he kind of, and you can kind of guess where he goes from there. He learns, you know, what it means to borrow money from the mob, no matter if they're friendly with you or not. It's on issue 3 at the moment, and issue 4 comes out May 26th. So I'd say if you like crime noir kind of stories like Brian Azzarello or Ed Brubaker, or any type of like autobiography comic books, this one is definitely worth checking out. I was put onto this by a good friend of mine, Josh, who runs the Comics Generally account on Instagram and Twitter. he mentioned this, and I was like, well, yeah, I'll buy issue one of Comixology. Comixology has been dangerous for me because they got that instant buy, and it automatically buys it and charges it, and now you got the book. I was just going to read issue one just to, you know, take his recommendation, give some feedback. I instantly bought all three and pre-ordered issue four. It's awesome. It's like, damn, this happened in real life, you know? It's done really well. I'll go ahead and champion that. And we normally pick a winner for these things, but since Cesar is gone, I'll say that we all win and Cesar loses.
Yeah.
So take that. And I normally wrap this series up by sharing some comic book recommendations that you guys can go ahead and order and put on your pull list at your local comic shops or buy. I am waiting on those recommendations from Ben. So how about we go on break? I should have them by then. I'll share them then. So Shortbox Nation, we're going to go on a quick music break. This is the part that you get to relax for a little. You get to enjoy some music brought to you by Mecha the Marvelous. This week's instrumental is called Piano. It reminds me a lot of like early Kanye West. So if you like it, check out more music by Marvelous on his Bandcamp, which is linked in the show notes. Don't press nothing. We'll be right back. Yo, all right, and we are back. Once again, that was music by Mecha the Marvelous. If you like what you hear, check out more of what he's got to offer on his Bandcamp. We got that link in the show notes. Like I said, before we went on break, I was waiting on our good friend Ben Kingsbury over at Gotham City Limit to send us some recommendations. You know, every week, anytime that we do the No Comic Shop for Oldman segment, we like to share three new comic books that you should consider for your consideration to put on your pull list. The FOC, the final order cutoff for these three I'm about to share is going to be Monday, May 10th. That means you need to go ahead and order these titles with your local comic shop or however you go about getting your new comic books. Here's what he's got for you this week. His first one is DC Pride number one. It's a one-shot by DC Comics. It celebrates Pride Month with 9 all-new stories with fan favorites such as Harley, Poison Ivy, Batwoman, and more. The second title is Apex Legends by Dark Horse Comics. It's Apex Legends Overtime number one. My apologies. It's a 4-issue miniseries. The legends from the Battle Royale video game get their own series. And last but not least, from Marvel Comics, he recommends Star Wars War of the Bounty Hunters number one. It's going to be a 5-issue miniseries. And he writes, at war for the greatest prize of all, Han Solo. The hunt begins and nobody steals from Boba Fett. So once again, that was DC Pride number one, Apex Legends Overtime number one, and Star Wars War of the Bounty Hunters number one. And I'm definitely going to get that Star Wars one because it is Steve McNiven, I think, doing the artwork.
Oh,
so I cannot wait to see what that looks like. So big shout outs to Ben over at Gotham City Limit for the recommendations. While I'm on the...
Another Mike Miller collaborator.
Oh, wait. With the
Old Man Logan.
Right? Oh, my God. Of course.
Yeah.
Damn, he's really... Yeah, Mike Moore.
Yeah,
which, I mean...
Didn't realize that.
Which
no
I mean,
scrubs.
Logan,
no
Logan.
Scrubs Miller,
100%. Which I mean, you know, if you look at the movie Logan, it kind of pulled a lot from Old Man Logan.
Yeah.
Damn, that's Marvel.
It was
artist.
Funny though because I was at the shop and people were like, "They're gonna do like they were thinking when they said it was influenced."
I hear it all the freaking time.
Yeah, it's like
all the time.
It's like they're gonna have a. You know, they're going to have Daredevil be eaten by a T-Rex.
Baby Hulk.
They're really going to do that? Yeah, Baby Hulk.
Yeah.
Oh, Baby Hulk.
No, it was not cute.
It was so cute.
Well, yeah, I saw a Marvel Legends a two-figure pack with Old Man Logan and Old Man Hawkeye. And I believe the Old Man Logan also had a Baby
backpack?
Hulk. Yeah, he had like a Baby Hulk.
And a little baby wrap?
Yes, and a baby wrap.
They should have one of like Bruce Banner, old frail Bruce Banner, and like crazy... monstrous Hulk when he changes.
Yeah, Mark Miller's he just be bright
movie
people. Quality
he put people into him.
Oh, that'd
when he
be
eats
cool.
Wolverine.
Yeah.
And speaking while I'm on shout outs, I want to go ahead and of course a shout out Jonathan Sanders for helping me figure out the Jupiter's Legacy number. And speaking of kind of Coliseum of Comics, shout outs to Daniel Ellis at Coliseum of comics as well. I was in the shop earlier this week dropping off some pins and stickers for you know, our local listeners, and he mentioned that he listens to the show and gave us some props. So
nice.
Shout out to Daniel Ellis, man. Support your local comic shops. And last but not least, I want to give a shout out to Tony Ayuppie, who's a frequent listener of the show. He's a Patreon subscriber, a good guy. He sent us a comic that he made while he was on quarantine. It's called Latchkey Kids. Not sure if he's got this for, you know, he's printed a bunch of these or whatnot, or he made it just for us. But I always enjoy any time that we get, you know, comic books, letters, stickers, or whatever it may be from our listeners. Always appreciate that. So shout out to Tony Ayuppie. We don't have any emails or questions from listeners this week. So I'll go ahead and encourage anyone listening today, you know, our listeners with us this episode, to feel free to email us a question or send us a comic book recommendation that you think we'd enjoy. I'd love to read that next episode. And you know what I'll do? I'll go ahead and mail out some of our new short box stickers. If I got some extra pens, I'll do that too. If you provide me an address and the email, I'll go ahead and send out some stickers to some of our listeners who provide us some things to read next week. So our inbox is theshortboxjacks@gmail.com. With the shout outs out the way, let's go ahead and jump to our last segment of the show, our champion season segment. Champion season, for those of you tuning in for the first time, is our segment where we highlight other worthwhile entertainment and recommendations that we feel deserve to be on your radar. These recommendations can be much more than comics, but can include our movie picks of the week, TV series that we've started, or maybe books or video games that have captured our attention and we feel, hey, it respected my time and it'll respect yours. It's worth checking out. Ed, how about you kick us off? What are you going to champion today?
I'm going to champion season 3 of Dark Side of the Ring on Vice TV. They're premiering, I believe, this weekend. Yeah, this upcoming weekend. But the first episode is a two-parter, and they have the first part of Brian Pillman's story on YouTube. So if you want to catch a sneak peek at that, those guys have done, basically it's kind of like some of the darker, you know, behind-the-scenes stories of some of wrestling's, you know, some well-known guys and some not-so-well-known guys, but they took a chance on doing this documentary series. Just two people are pretty much doing this and setting up all the interviews. They do these really, really cool reenactments where they'll actually get some wrestlers to kind of, you know, imitate the people they're portraying, because a lot of them unfortunately have passed. So, but the way they film it, where it's kind of blurry and kind of in shadows, it's a really cool, stylistically is really cool. And one of the guys, I don't remember, he also does this thing on the side called Power Comics, which is basically, basically like a YouTube channel, but he looks at like after the Turtles boom, there was like a big, just glut of like independent comics, self-published comics that came out, because people think, oh, if they can make money, we can too. Nah, it doesn't work like that. But there are kind of these really crude comics that were made kind of like in the 80s, 90s called Power Comics. There's an Instagram that's pretty funny. And they do like a YouTube show, kind of like cartoonist kayfabe, but it's not quite as polished as them. But yeah, those are the two things I'd recommend checking out. But it's cool kind of seeing the wrestling and the comics, kind of those two worlds tie in together. But yeah, but Dark Side of the Ring will be on Vice TV, but you can see all the episodes. I think they put all the episodes on YouTube. So definitely check them out if you're a wrestling fan, especially, or if you want to see kind of a more human side of the things, the more behind the scenes stories. And a lot of times the drama behind the scenes is better than the actual wrestling. So, but I definitely recommend those series.
For some reason, I thought Dark Side of the Ring was just I thought it was either just like one movie or documentary. I didn't know it was like a multi-season series.
It's a documentary series, but yeah, it's on its third season now. It's become a hit for Vice because they really had to push this and convince Vice to even air it. But it's been their highest rated show.
Wow.
And like I said, the network is, I think, trying to branch out more from the news and things like that and get more content, but they've really been behind these guys. And it's, like I said, it's basically like a two-man team that do pretty much everything, you know, so it's a really cool story.
Damn, that's cool. Good recommendations. What about you, Ashley? What you got this week?
I have a documentary series too. It came out last year though, and I just started watching. It's called McMillions. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it's on HBO. And it's about the McDonald's $1 million prize, the Monopoly thing that they would do. And I had no idea that the whole epicenter of that whole scam was Jacksonville, Florida.
Whoa. We're famous, y'all.
Yeah.
For all the wrong reasons yet again.
It just starts out talking to like this guy, and he's like a character. He's just like a really charismatic guy in the FBI, just kind of recounting how they found out and how they got into this story.
What was the scam? I don't even know. I remember playing it.
Well, between 1989 and 2001, all the $1 million winners
were like related or something, right?
Yeah, it was like there were these guys that were picking the winners and getting like half their money for that long, 1989 to 2001.
1989
to 2001. They ran it.
Yeah, that game was going on for years.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Because I remember like going to different McDonald's and trying to get like a...
So that's why we never won.
I know. It's like, yeah. I got a small fry. That's it.
Yeah. And it's kind of going into like how they did it and like kind of going into the people and the inner... And it's really cool because there's so much footage, because when you win the $1 million, they would come and, you know, do like a little video segment with you. And so you're seeing these people just boldface lie on camera, like back in the day. It's so, there's so much footage. It's really interesting.
They
and
come
just,
with like the big check and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're just like, that guy's a liar. You can see him lying. It's really good. So it's six
episodes.
What a
surprise. I am a millionaire. Yeah, yeah.
Reading from a script dryly.
Yeah. There's this one dude and he's literally just like pouring sweat.
Oh just my God.
Pouring sweat on the camera. And they're asking him like where he got his ticket, and he's like, I went to the beach first, and he's like giving the story, and you're like, nobody cares about all this stuff.
Yeah,
it's like if there was ever a red flag of you lying, it'd be
nobody
this.
But me was involved in this winning. And, I mean, what was that?
Yeah, it's really good.
Dang. Okay. Yeah. I had heard like. Yeah, you said came out last year. I think that was when I'd seen like a lot of people talk about it and things like that. Okay, so it's worth checking out.
Jacksonville, Florida. Yeah.
I shouldn't be too surprised, but you know, another claim to fame. I'll take it. At this point, I will take it.
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
True. You got anything else, Ashley?
No, that's it.
Okay. I got two things to champion. One is this image grant. Do I have it over here? I think I got it over there. I'll share it with you guys here in a sec. But it's called Image Grand Design. It's a fan-made comic with artwork and other comic submissions from like over 30 artists all over the world. It's a product of the same masterminds behind the Cartoonist Kayfabe Ringside Group on Facebook. So just like imagine a giant fanzine / anthology comic that pays respects to like the 90s image days. 100% of their sales goes to the Hero Initiative Foundation, which helps comic creators who need like emergency medical aid, financial support. It just kind of creates like an avenue to pay them back for all their work. I will be having Eli Schwab on the show later this month to talk about the project in a little more detail. I'll be giving away some of the digital copies when that episode comes out, but you can grab one for yourself and support a really good cause by going to imagegranddesign.com. They actually have like a tab for a podcast series they did about this project. I think every episode is talking with a different comic creator or artist that contributed to the project. So check it out. It's only $5 to get it digital. I'll ask Eli about any physical copies, but the physical copy I got sent, a little advanced one, looks really good. And if you ever bought, I think I brought up the Wizard fanzine year or two ago. Yeah. So it's like that same quality, very hardy book, a whole bunch of different comics in it, worth checking out. And the last thing I'll champion is the season finale of Invincible.
Oh,
boy. My God. Ashley, have you watched the show? Because I need to know if I can go into it.
I've watched all except for the very last episode because I'm like,
I should have texted
you.
Something told me, text Ashley so we can all have a convo about it. But it's okay.
I can plug my ears,
but I have one
episode left.
What I might do is ask Ed to stay a little behind so we can talk about it. Only because everyone and their mom has hit me up about the season finale.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, maybe we should have actually talked about the season finale for a whole episode. But I will say this, if you have been watching Invincible and you've been saving the season finale, it'll be Wednesday when this episode comes out. There's a lot of days to wait for the season finale, but I don't blame you. Pick it at your own time. It's amazing. If you've been watching the show and you watch the season finale, you probably can match my hype. Ed, you've been doing a great job posting about it on our social media pages. Was that season finale not amazing? You don't got to go into detail, but
it was
incredible.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's been picked up for seasons two and a third season has me hype, because the amount of things that they can, the different story arcs that they can go into, the characters they can bring on. They tease a little bit of it, of where they want to go at the end of that the season finale. And I'm just hype, man. Kudos to this, kudos to these guys, man. They have produced something that is not only that not only honors the source material in the comic book, but has managed to make it, you know, its own. You know, it feels like such, it feels like a treat having like a different form of the comic series.
They added
done
some wrinkles to it.
Yeah, for sure.
It,
100%.
I will go ahead and say, if you enjoyed the show but you've never read the comic, do yourself a treat. It's only 140 issues about, and you'll go through them. If you like the show, you'll love the comic book. Those are my champions: Image Grand Design and the Invincible season finale. With my champions, that brings us to the end of the show. Shortbox Nation, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Hopefully you guys check out Jupiter's Legacy, whether that be in comic form or the Netflix series that'll be out this Friday. We'd love to hear from you guys to know what you guys think. If you do end up reading the comic, or if you watch the show, shoot us a message, man. We'd love to read some emails or hear from our listeners next episode. Once again, theshortboxjacks@gmail.com. Ashley, Ed, do either of you guys have any commissions open? Are you guys doing any commissions, taking any artwork?
I'm doing some pet commissions right now.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of busy, but if anybody throws me like a Game of Thrones or like a Loki, I would never turn it down.
Oh, nice.
I like it. Ed, what about you? You still cranking out the Spider-Ham stuff, or you got room?
Yeah, I got room. I'm almost caught up, but I'm always taking commission requests for sure.
And once again, I have links to both Ashley and Ed's website and social media pages. So if you want to commission a piece of artwork from them, check out the show notes for those links. I've got a pre-recorded outro with information on next week's episode and other things we got going on. So stay tuned for that. And we appreciate you hanging out with us this week. Take care and tune in next Wednesday for more comic talk. Peace. Shortbox Nation, that is the end of our episode this week. The convo doesn't have to stop when the mics go off. We'd love for you to chime into the conversation with a thought or maybe a comment you'd like to share about this episode. Or maybe, have you read Jupiter's Legacy? How'd you like it? Let us know. Send us something short and sweet to our inbox, theshortboxjacks@gmail.com. Or hit us up on social media, whether that be on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. You can always reach out. We love hearing from the Shortbox Nation and listeners like you. Once again, I want to go ahead and thank Ed and Ashley for joining me this week. And of course, thank our supporters like our sponsor Gotham City Limit and our Patreon subscribers. If you like our content and you want more of it in the form of bonus episodes, topic voting, and merch, man, consider supporting the show and joining our Patreon community at patreon.com/theshortbox. We've also got a link to that in the show notes. Check it out. And lastly, I want to thank you and, of course, the rest of the Shortbox Nation for tuning in this week. We'll be back next Wednesday with the full crew to talk about a comic book legend that doesn't get enough shine. She'll be the focus of our next artist spotlight episode. The last one we did was episode 314. We talked about the British comic artist legend Brian Bolland. Next week, we'll be talking about Marie Severin, who's an artist and colorist best known for her work for Marvel Comics and EC Comics back in the 1950s. She is an inductee in the Will Eisner Comic Hall of Fame and the Harvey Award Hall of Fame. She's got a lot of credentials, and we can't wait to put a spotlight on what she's done for the comic book world. Like I said, that'll be next week. So make sure you're subscribed to the show on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss that. In the meantime, look, take care of yourselves. Have a great week. And please continue to make mine and yours Shortbox. Peace.